Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Chris Collinsworth podcast, along with Richard Sherman. We'll bring him on in just a second. But this has been perhaps one of the strangest years that anybody can remember. And in particular, trying to broadcast football games has been just bizarre. We started out the season in Kansas City. So it was opening night, dropped the banners on the world champion Kansas City Chiefs. They're playing against Houston, you know, and 16,000 people got a chance to come into the stadium. 16,000 of the luckiest people got the golden ticket. They got to be there when they dropped the banners and celebrate their first Super Bowl championship in 50 years. The players go out in the middle of the field and link arms as a sign of unity. They tried to portray a very positive message. And these 16,000 fans that got their golden ticket to come in and cheer them are booing like crazy. They are yelling obscenities because there are so few people in the stadium that I could actually hear some of what they were saying. And so that was weird. That whole thing got started very weird. We go to Los Angeles. The brand new $5 billion stadium in Los Angeles is going to be open. And the only voices you can hear in the entire thing are Al Michaels and mine. And everything else is completely empty in this beautiful arena. Seattle, we go there for the huge matchup against New England. And you know that when they get backed up into the end zone, the 12, the unbelievable crowd is just such a raucous part of the whole environment. Quarterbacks can't even call the signals, just whispers, crickets out there. We go to New Orleans next, the party capital of America, one of the great cities of all time. Just go and have fun. Nothing's open. Can't get in a restaurant. It's unbelievable. And then this past week, we go to San Francisco and Santa Clara County, where we can take on the 49ers and the Philadelphia Eagles. And for the first time in our careers, we're asked to wear a mask. And that was a little bit different. So we go from that to my favorite part of the week. Here we go with Richard Sherman. We already caused quite the stir in week one. All your 49ers faithful out there were all shaken up that we were doing a podcast. So I had some fun with them. And I had some fun in Santa Clara. That was an interesting experience out there. They have strict rules in Santa Clara, right?
Very strict rules.
Yeah. So Al and I got to do a broadcast with a mask on for the first time. That was interesting. So we go in, you go to the hotel, and there's no room service. There's no maid service. There's just somebody at the front desk. No, you can't go to the gym. You can't do anything. Okay, all right, fine. It's no problem. Go outside. You have dinner, and they like to smoke in the restaurants, things that aren't cigarettes, but yeah, it's all right with me. I'm good. I got no problem with that. I have no problem. And then as you're having dinner in one of these outdoor restaurants, cars and motorcycles are going by about 150 miles an hour with the and I'm like, what the? I haven't seen a police officer anywhere, nowhere, right? So they tell us we've got to wear our masks to do the broadcast. All right, fine. I understand it's COVID season. I don't know how to do a broadcast with a mask on, but I'm going to do it. All right, no problem. So we're all in agreement. So about an hour before the game starts, I pulled my mask down for a minute for something. I have no idea why, but I pulled my mask down for a minute to look at something, to do something, to eat something, to drink something, to tell somebody something. I don't know what it was, but something. Within 5 minutes, we got a picture into our booth of me with my mask down from somebody with a telephoto lens in the booth opposite the field. It had to be 150 yards away, a close-up of me And I'm sitting there and I go, I cannot believe, I haven't seen a police officer in this town since I got here. We got everything in the world going on, but I dropped my mask for 1 second.
You got the police on.
The most wanted list. It's unbelievable. I've never been through anything. So anyway, we'll be back to Santa Clara. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm not, won't be allowed back in. I have
right,
no idea.
You may be on a banned list soon.
I'm most wanted in Santa Clara County. So there you go.
They're on it. I think they had, because I'm on IR right now, and they were so hard, we couldn't even go in the locker room. So our locker room, this isn't like just our game day locker room. This is our locker room in general. And so we had to go do rehab before the game. You know, we got to go, you know, get our workout in and get our rehab done before the team comes. And they wouldn't allow us in our own locker room.
Really?
Because it's the game day locker room. So they said they had to literally bring us our clothes outside and then we go work out. And then they brought us our other clothes and took our other clothes back. And then we got dressed and we had to go. It just, it's crazy the amount of things that we go through, you know, for, you know, to keep safe. And obviously you understand the regulations and things like that. But when it's a locker room full of guys that you know, I've literally been in this locker room with these guys all week and I've tested with them all week. And, you know, I didn't really understand that, but, you know, it's the protocols.
We had two COVID tests, one the night before, the full swab in the brain cells, twisted around the whole.
Oh.
We did it all. We did it all. But that's okay. 12 hours later, I understand that, you know, don't pull it down for a minute. I got it. I understand. Anyway. Interesting game the other day. I mean, I did get to see your 49ers. Unfortunately, you weren't out there to play on IR, but not Nick Mullins' best outing, not close to what he had done the day before. But you can see the makings of your 49er team, right? You get George Kittle, you get Debo Samuel back, you get some of the physicality on the offensive side. And I heard a new term that I was just gonna ask you about. And talking about the field corner. So Jason Verrett taking over for you, and that's a position you've kind of made famous out there. And, you know, I talked about it a little bit during the game, but I thought, why not? I got Richard. Let me ask him. He's been doing it his whole life. And, well, you know, one of the things that's always so interesting to me is obviously it means that you have the most space. The ball's usually on the opposite hash. You're on the wide side of the field. And so you're not going to get a lot of help with linebackers or strong safeties dropping underneath, right? It's just too far. So a lot of your job is to watch the receiver, but you're really kind of watching the quarterback, aren't you?
Right. You get more time and space. And it's the longest throw on the field. You know, if a quarterback throws a go route to the boundary, those are the times they'll take that shot usually. You know, there are quarterbacks that'll throw the go ball to the field, but it's a long throw because you got to throw it probably roughly 30 to 35, 40 yards laterally, and then you got to get it 40 to 50 yards down the field. So, you know, I don't know what the math is, but it's a long throw and it takes long. And so when you play with the kind of vision that I'm used to playing with, then usually you can get a beat on when the ball's coming out, you know. But as you said, the weakness is you don't get any help. You don't get any buzzers. You don't get any, you know, the safety is usually leaning closer to the boundary side so he can get there. But he'll rarely get there to save you. So there's pros and cons to it. You know, they do it more in college than they do in NFL for a number of reasons. But it's a system that our coaches wanted to institute this year. And it had been working effectively. You know, obviously I got banged up early, but it's been cool. It's just, you know, we were playing Arizona first week and they stayed on the ball. You know, they didn't huddle or anything. So, you know, that made it a little more complicated because, you know, you're literally sprinting from, you know, tackle to line up at the other side of the field, you know, so it's a lot of running.
It's interesting to watch your team play a zone defense, but it's such a downhill attacking, you know, backs coming out of the backfield, but your linebackers are trying to come up and make contact, make them believe that they're blitzing. You guys really try to play defense despite the zone on the other side of the line of scrimmage, don't you?
100%. It's definitely aggressive. You know, as you said on the broadcast, you know, the heart and soul of that defense is you know, those linebackers and with Fred and Quan. And the way they play, you know, always sets the tone. You know, the D-line, Eric Armstead and Kerry Hyder have done a phenomenal job, DJ Jones. And You know, we've been beat up at corner, so that's where, you know, guys like Dante Johnson, who hurt his groin during the game and just had to fight through. And Kwan Williams, who's one of the best nickels in football, you know, we try to play aggressive. You know, you don't ever want to be known as a soft defense or sit back, lay back, and watch things happen. You know, you can run zone, you can still be aggressive and you know, get things stopped.
Speaking of aggressive, the Tennessee Titans apparently a little too aggressive with the COVID vaccine or COVID stuff last week. You know, this is really getting interesting. For the first time last week, there were multiple games we didn't know what was going to happen, right? I mean, whether it was Tennessee and Pittsburgh, ultimately they canceled that one because the schedule kind of worked out where they could make that one work a little bit. The Saints got a positive test that ended up being a negative test. And then, you know, the biggie, then Cam Newton comes down with a positive test and they push the game back a day. Give us a little bit of the insight of somebody on the players committee as to what was going on with all those discussions last week.
Well, a lot of it is the league's decision. You know, obviously, the safety of the players is at the forefront of all discussions. So it's just about making sure that we can have the game safely. And, you know, with the Tennessee Titans, they're, you know, with the facility closed, which was the right decision, the right protocol to take. You know, I know what their head coach said, you know, hey, no matter what, we'll be ready to play. But it's about player safety at that point, you know, to put players in a situation where they're playing a game with no practice reps and no conditioning and without a week of weightlifting and things like that was never an option for us. And so those are the things that I always go into consideration when thinking of that. People were like, man, well, you know, they're pros, they'll remember how to play, but it's like, you know, 3 days not practicing, you know, no, even if you've just been running and conditioning, you know, it's not the same as practicing, and you don't want to put those players behind the eight ball. But I think moving forward, the choices are going to be more limited, especially dealing with the same team with no bye weeks to do it. So it'll be interesting to see what decision the league makes in terms of how they punish a team who, you know, maybe in week 9, week 10, week 11 has the same issue.
You know, and Richard, not to mention, it's almost flu season here. So when you're starting to answer all those questions, you know, have you been in touch with anyone with COVID? Do you have a temperature? Have you sneezed or coughed or what? You know, all those different things. Flu season is going to kick in and some of those answers are going to be yes.
Exactly. Some of those answers are going to be yes to the same questions those answers were no to. And it's not because guys necessarily have COVID-19, but it's just because it's flu season. People catch the flu, they get sniffles, they get stuffy nose. And those are the things that could challenge our league in the future and during, you know, such an interesting year, regardless of what the tests say, you know, because the symptoms will say something, but the test may still say negative.
For the first time ever, the commissioner also brought up the possibility of forfeiting games. So maybe the scenario you talked about, the Tennessee Titans, who have already had their one game pushed back, if they have other issues within their locker room. Now the possibility at least has been put on the table that that's it. You're going to forfeit the game.
Right, and that's tough for any team to have to deal with is forfeiting a game, especially with the playoffs on the line. And, you know, it's tough for a team to hear that. But I think it would light the fire under a team and create the discipline that you need to overcome these circumstances that we're in. Because a team knows, you know, you do this, you have these positives, whether they're players or staff, you're going to deal with a tough issue, and you can forfeit a game. So if you're in playoff, every game matters in this league. This is an 82-game season. It's a 16-game season, so every game could be the one.
The other thing that's been brought up, I believe, at least for the playoff is a possibility, is a team-by-team bubble or a regional bubble. But now with what happened in Tennessee, has the league come back to the players at all and said, listen, we're going to have to bubble within the individual teams, go in hotels so that you're fully protected?
I think that would be difficult for the same reason that it was difficult before. You know, when you have a team-by-team bubble, that means everyone has to bubble. So not just the 69 players, but every single coach, their staff, their families. So either they have to bubble away from their families or they have to bubble with their families. Either way, it's difficult. Then you talk about team doctors who do surgeries outside the team. You know, just because you're a team doctor doesn't mean all your work is with the team. our doctors a lot of times work at Stanford, in Stanford Hospital. So they do surgeries, you know, maybe every Friday, and they got surgeries to do all day Friday or all day Wednesday, et cetera, et cetera. And then they come work with us Saturday and Sunday and travel with the team, et cetera. But then it's like, how far do you go with the bubble? You know, so it could be 200-300 people that you bubble in away every day. How expensive does that get for the league? And so I think that for those reasons, it's been, you know, it hasn't really been discussed.
Interesting. All right, let's get on to a little football here. It's really been an interesting year so far. And as you look at it, you start going, is it really just all about the quarterback? You look at the undefeated teams, you look at the one loss teams, and let's go down the list. I mean, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Ben Roethlisberger. Then you start getting into some of the interesting guys. You go, yeah, okay, it's all about the quarterback. Those guys are all great quarterbacks. Josh Allen, now undefeated. You've got Ryan Tannehill, undefeated. You've got Lamar, you've got Brady, you've got Mayfield with one loss, you know, some of those kinds of guys. Are we seeing it now to where if you, like a hot goalie, I guess, in hockey, right? That if you get the hot quarterback, you get Russell playing the way that Russell's playing right now, you get Aaron, you get Patrick playing the way those guys are playing right now, is it just too difficult defensively to knock those guys out of the box? Because, you know, generally we see the same 7 or 8 quarterbacks in the playoffs every single year.
Right. I think during the regular season, for sure, you know, because that's how the league's tilted, you know, and it has always been. And obviously as a defensive guy, I'm going to sound like a bitter defensive guy.
Go for it, man.
The offense.
That's what we like you best. Go for it, man.
Right. But at the end of the day, you know, at every flag, you know, and you're seeing it game by game, 3rd and 27, a 5-yard penalty, automatic first down, keeping drives alive that ended up being scoring drives in a situation where the team would have been punting. That's points. That's in the playoffs, they'll hold their whistles for calls like that. They're not going to call illegal contact away from the ball on a random play on 3rd and 27 in the playoffs, because it has too great of an impact on the game and too great of an impact unless it's, you know, the receiver that's being targeted on the play. They're probably not going to call it. In a regular season, they're calling it more arbitrarily. And so I think, you know, it has the same impact, but I think you're right. You know, the quarterback, when you're not allowed to hit him, you're not allowed to land on him, you're not allowed to fluster him, really, you know, everybody's doing their best to do their job at a high level, but still avoid getting penalized for hitting the quarterback. So you got to give those guys credit for how they're playing. But, you know, this league is designed. I'm sure all the old quarterbacks, the Steve Youngs, the Elways, the Montanas would sit there and complain all day because their records are about to go down from quarterbacks, from everybody. You know, everybody's going to break records these days. You know, they'll kill the records that of old because of how the game's designed.
And even Aaron Rodgers now having the advantage with the hard count. I heard that he drew him off last night by saying hard count. Hard count! And he jumped off the which I love. I think that's fantastic. Bill O'Brien loses his job. Here we go. We're 4 weeks into the season. They've had the hardest schedule to date, but he did. He took over not just as the head coach. He took over as the general manager. You want to make some of those decisions, then sometimes you're going to pay the price for that as well. DeAndre Hopkins, of course, the one everybody's talking about during the course of the offseason. It's a bloody business, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know what they say. With great power comes great responsibility. And they gave him the ultimate power. You know, they gave him power of everything. And you know, obviously some of the moves he made, you know, from the Tunsil trade for the 2 first rounders with no extension to obviously the Hopkins deal, guys, the trading Jadeveon Clowney, you know, when you still owed him money, you know, you're paying him $7 million to play for the Seattle Seahawks. Moves like that would put a lot of GMs on the hot seat individually on a case-by-case basis. But those decisions coupled with the losing record, I think, were the final straws that broke the camel's back.
You know what's amazing, though? I mean, here's a guy that basically had been in the playoffs, had won a couple of playoff games along the way. You go, all right, yeah, and that maybe he's going to get the long leash. I'm not sure it had anything to do with his coaching. It almost felt like, and as a player, you know, you wonder, it's one thing when you're trying to negotiate a contract and the head coach is going, hey, it's out of my hands. You got to deal with the GM. I've told him how much I love you, how much I want you. I want him to pay you, but that's not me. It's the general manager. Go hate on him. But now, as a player, if you're not getting paid what you want or not getting the deal that you want, it's the head coach you're mad at. And that's a little different level.
It's 100% a different level. And to that point, you got to think about how bad of a situation they're leaving the next head coach of the Houston Texans in. They have a 200. They have the highest payroll in the league right now. And if I asked you to name me the players that are being paid all that money, could you? You know, because they don't have the Hopkins. They have a ton of dead money. You know, with guys they've traded away or given away or didn't pan out, et cetera, et cetera. So you know, all those moves are moves that you're like, man. So you know, whether it's Bienemy or whether it's Salah or whether it's whoever the next head coach of that team is, they're gonna have a tough time trying to manage that, especially with, you know, depending on what salary cap looks like next year. You know, if it takes the dip that we expected or stays flat, it's going to be tough to field a team, you know, with those constraints.
All right, now we're going to get to the soap opera part of our show. You got to tell me, this is a guy, you know, a former teammate of yours in Golden Tate. He and Jalen Ramsey apparently got into it in the game, outside the locker room after the game. It's personal. It's Golden sister, right? And I mean, there's some, that was pretty wild. That one's, I don't think I've even heard of anything quite like that one.
You know, as they always say, football never ceases to amaze. And, you know, there was something Golden said when the situation happened a while ago, and I think he tweeted it out. And he said, if you ever saw him, it was going to be personal. And I think that was the first time they've crossed paths on the field since the incident happened. And, you know, when it comes down to family, you know how it is. You know, people cut for their families and they'll fight for them. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, Jalen made a decision, you know, based on the information he had and what he felt was best for him. And Golden made the decision where he felt like it was best in his conflict of interest. And at the end of the day, grown men handled it like grown men. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, it's part of it. Emotions, personal, it's all part of this game.
All right. I'm going to tell one Super Bowl story and then I'm going to ask you about one. So in 81, we go to the Super Bowl. We're playing San Francisco. I've lost to them twice in my career, so you don't have to ask me who we were playing. We San Francisco lost twice. We're coming in, and it is in Pontiac, Michigan, and it's absolutely frigid. I mean, it is frigid. We just came out of the freeze bowl the week before, 9 below 0, 59 below zero wind chill factor. I'm in my rookie year at the University of Florida. I think I'm going to die. I would just think I'm going to die. And so we go to Pontiac the next week, and the president decides he's coming to the game. Well, if you've ever been to Pontiac Stadium, there is exactly one road in and one road out. So we get in there, and now we are on the highway, and we're stuck. We can't go anywhere because the presidential motorcade is taking that lane, and they've shut down everything. So now, instead of getting to the game 3 hours before the game, or whatever you typically do, we're in there about 45 minutes before we're supposed to be out on the field for pregame warmup. So everybody's in a full panic, and a lot of guys get taped right before the game. They don't want to get taped back at the hotel. They want to get taped right there. So within 20 minutes of getting there, there is now a full knockdown, drag out brawl going on in our training room between guys who want to get taped before the other guy gets taped. And you can imagine the emotions. It's insane, right? I mean, you can't recreate those kinds of emotions. So we go out for the beginning of the game, and I still blame Diana Ross because she was singing the national anthem, and she walked right in front of our bench instead of the 49ers bench. And this is when Diana Ross was Diana Ross, right? I mean, right, it was right, like, right, hey. And so our guys are, you know, we're all, you know, a little distracted out there. And we went out in the first half between all my excuses I just gave, and we stunk. I stunk. Had a catch down to the 5-yard line. I fumbled the ball. I mean, we in the history of our team, we had never played a half of football like we played. We were awful. We're down 20-0. Forrest Gregg gets us back in the locker room and he says, "Well, boys, You can't f*** it up any worse than you just f***ed it up. Just go give it a shot here in the second half, right? And so we're literally laughing kind of, despite the fact that we're totally humiliated, come out and really have a chance to win the game at the end. I mean, we legitimately had a shot. We closed 2014. We could have gotten the ball back, all these different kinds of things. But there is no emotion like Super Bowl emotion.
Nothing.
And I know I was there when your emotion probably was at an all-time high. When Russell throws the interception, right? It's second down and one from the one-yard line. Everybody in the stadium's expecting Marshawn Lynch to be handed the football. I thought, maybe, okay, if it's not Marshawn Lynch, then, you know, they're going to do some kind of run-pass option, you know, for Russell outside. If it's not there, throw it away. It's still third down. Right. You're eating a little clock. You're taking time away from Tom Brady, da-da-da. The only thing on planet Earth I was not expecting out of a 5'11 quarterback was a throw over the middle. And anyway, the whole thing blows up, right?
Right.
So I'm announcing the game. And I must have taken 30 seconds to think this one through. And I'm just looking at, and finally Al looks at me and I go, I can't believe that call. And I, you know, and you forget you're talking to 120 million people, you know? And so it's like, so this becomes the biggest news story of my personal life, that all this is going on. They took a picture of your face and obviously one for the ages out of there. Can you recall that moment and the raw emotion of living through that moment?
I think I was in just as much disbelief as you are. I just happened to be in the game. Because it was a situation where we had so much momentum going into that, because Jermaine Kearse just came up with that crazy catch. So it was already kind of uncharted territory when he made that catch. It kind of bounced off his chest.
Sure.
So we had made it down there, and then I think they gave the ball to Marshawn, you know, and he broke a few tackles, got about 3-4 yards, got down to the one. And so you're kind of like, yeah, I mean, the expectation walking in, and then we're almost like, get ready for defense, you know what I mean? We got a clock situation where they're going to try to, you know, get the ball down the field pretty quick, get a field goal. And you see the call, and you see the result. It kind of happened fast, you know what I mean? You know, because anytime a quarterback guns it in there in the red zone, you kind of still expect the ball to bounce. You know what I mean? He caught it flush. I still don't know how he caught that flush.
This is amazing. I don't know how Michaels came up with his name either, to be honest with you. Malcolm right. Butler had only been in the game for about 7 plays, and he was like, boom, Malcolm Butler. I was like, what?
Like, who? No, but he made an incredible play. But it was just more surprised that they didn't give Marshawn the football at that point in time, because it was just the play before he had basically almost scored. Yep. And so you expected him to get in on the next one. So it was just more disbelief just about from everybody. You probably just verbalized what we were thinking.
It was amazing. And I can only imagine the locker room afterwards. And of course, it's been part of the myth of that Seattle locker room forever, is exactly what did happen in there. Is there anything you can tell us about that moment in there and what went down with your team?
Honestly, it was obviously frustration, but it was more somber than anything. You know, it was more quiet, and you know, it's guys were still in disbelief. You know, you one of those games you expect to win.
Yeah, it was a bizarre one as well. How are you feeling? We're ready to we come back. I get to wear my mask again in 2 weeks, so we come back to San Francisco to watch you guys play again here in a bit. How you feeling? How soon are you getting back on the field?
We're trying to get that figured out right now. I'm trying to make it back for that game. The plan was for me to practice this week. We're still working through that. You know, so this rehab process, they are way more meticulous than back in the day when they tell you to tape it up and just get back out there and give you a tour to all and you know, let you go. So, you know, they're concerned, you know, with the long term, you know, making sure I'm able to play the whole season. So we'll see. I'm fighting to get out there when you're here wearing your mask, and make sure you drink with it and eat with it on and don't remove.
Let's go a couple of lightning rounds and I'll let you get out of here. Let's talk a little bit about New York, New York. We've got two New York teams without a win. You guys saw them both up there. What the heck is going on with what used to be sort of the epicenter of football?
I think a lot. You know, I think obviously for the Giants, losing Saquon Barkley is a huge deal. You got two young quarterbacks, you know, with high expectations. But you're not giving them enough talent. You know what I mean? At this point, you know, Crowder, when we played him, Crowder wasn't playing. The Giants are beat up. Saquon is pretty much all they're built around. And the same is true for the Jets. You know, they don't have their best player playing. And so anytime you go through a season and you're starting it off, you know, kind of creating an offense surrounding a player, like both of these offenses were, they're creating offenses surrounding the running backs, and you lose them early in the season. I mean, it kind of throws everything for a loop, and you're trying to adjust on the fly. You're trying to find replacements on the fly. I think the Giants had just picked up Freeman, and you know, that maybe earlier that week, and had to play him, you know, and you know, it's still no excuse. These are still NFL players, but I think a lot of it starts with them creating plans around guys that aren't there anymore.
You've seen a lot of young quarterbacks during the course of your career, played against so many of them. There are some ones that are starting to get a little attention for themselves right now. Justin Herbert, of course, playing with the Rams. Joe Burrow and what he's been able to do. Been doing some fantastic things, all a buzz here in Cincinnati. And now the question comes down to Tua, right? I mean, there's no way you take him where you take him without getting him in the game, without having him get his shot. He's come off some injuries when he was at Alabama. Your thoughts on when quarterbacks should be in? We've seen the Troy Aikmans and the John Elways of the world, the Dan Marinos come right in. Some did well, some did horribly, but they became great players. When does Tua belong in the game for the Dolphins?
I think they're waiting for it to happen naturally, honestly, because that's the way you can feel like it's not forced. You know what I mean? You never want to get him out there and, you know, it not go the way you know, you can ruin somebody's career like that. You put him out there too early. He doesn't have confidence. He loses confidence, never regains it, and his career is ruined. And that's happened to countless quarterbacks, and everybody's like, oh man, this guy's a bust. This guy sucks. And it's sometimes it's just being in the right situation at the right time. And like the way Herbert was introduced, he wasn't expecting to play. So when your expectations are so low for the guy, he can go out there and play, you know, free and let it go. But when you have super high expectations like they did for Burroughs, it's more difficult to walk in and play like you're capable of playing because the pressure's on you. You know, if you play well, if you do it right, some guys can handle it, but every move is scrutinized. Nobody's scrutinizing Herbert's every move because, hey, they're just kind of waiting for Tyrod Taylor. Oh man, Tyrod Taylor had an injury. You didn't even get any reps. You're not expected to play. He goes out there and plays phenomenally. It's awesome. I think with Tua, I think they want it to happen organically. Like if something happens where Fitzpatrick's having a rough game or he, you know, knock on wood, he goes down or anything like that, then I'm sure they're comfortable putting him in, unless there is some kind of injury, which they aren't speaking of. But I don't think they want to just say, hey, we're snatching Fitzpatrick because he's playing pretty good football. Fitzmagic is a good quarterback when he's on his P's and Q's. He's a gunslinger. He makes some mistakes, but he's putting them in position to win games. You know, they had a chance last week versus a Seattle team that's playing good football. You know, obviously you talked about Russell Wilson, but he still gave him a chance. And I think that, you know, until he stops giving him a chance or makes a ton of mistakes, I'm sure if he throws 3-4 interceptions, you may see a change. But right now he's giving him a great chance to win football games.
Final question. Mike Nolan down with the Dallas Cowboys is under fire. They're scoring points left and right with the Cowboys, and they're giving up points in a crazy fashion down there as well. How difficult, and have you ever been a part of it, would it be, or how impossible would it be to just change coordinators in the middle of a season and expect better results?
I can't say I've heard of it often. I'm sure it's possible because like they've talked about, you know, his scheme is so complicated. Like it's so variable, you know what I mean? It's so diverse. And people think that means good defense, and it doesn't. You know, you don't have a foundation, you don't have an identity. So you have nothing to fall back on. So when things aren't going great, it's not like you have, hey, we can put the fire out with this. We're going to run this until we get things under control. It's just like a patchwork of, hey, we're going to keep throwing things at the wall and see what sticks. And when you have that as a player, then you're like, okay, so you don't even know how we're getting attacked. Are we getting attacked as a cover two defense, a man-to-man defense, a quarters defense, a cover three defense? Like, how are they attacking us? Because we're in so much nonsense. And so I think, I don't know if changing the coordinators changes the way they run their playbook, but if you change coordinators and they go back to foundational fundamentals of running a certain defense, then I think they'll have better results. But who am I?
Who am I? Who am I either? I'm with you, brother. All right, man. King Richard, good talking to you. As always, we shall see you next week. Get well.
Thank you very much. I can't wait to see you. We're going to have some good stuff to talk about.
All right, here we go. Brand new segment on the show. We're going to talk about the games upcoming here.
Yes,
and
sir.
There are some interesting games indeed. And George Shahuri is here. And let's start right off here, because some of these don't even have betting lines yet, yeah. Right? I mean, Denver, New England, does anybody know what's going to happen with Cam Newton? Is Drew Locke going to play? How do you even figure that out?
Well, I was trying to think about what this line would be before we knew Cam Newton was going to be out. You know, how many points is Cam Newton worth to the Patriots? And then watching them last night, and you go, and I'm curious your thought here, like, without Cam Newton, are they even a playoff team? They looked awful.
That was the question going into the season,
yeah.
Was like, what were they going to possibly be? And I think we got a little glimpse of that last night. Now, their defense was fantastic and did a great job and would keep them in games. And I guess Jared Stidham would ultimately have been that guy. But you just wonder whether or not they could have, should have, would have. And I'm going to agree with you. I think that Cam Newton, you want to put a touchdown on it, it might be two based on what we saw last night.
Because it's like he brings the running element that's so massive to their passing game too, you know, and you're right back, you know, with Hoyer or Stidham, you just have to get guys open. So my thought was, when that line comes out, if it's anything around a touchdown, you know, 7, 7.5, 8, I really like the Patriots there, because I think their people might be forgetting, like, Cam Newton is that good. He's that guy. And I, you know, Drew Locke coming back from injury is different than Cam Newton coming back from an asymptomatic COVID case.
Always tough coming back on the road after a Monday night game, right? And having to get back into your week, but who knows? All right, Buffalo at Tennessee. Of course, Tennessee coming off of finally getting some negative tests and looks like they might be able to make a move. But Josh Allen was so impressive last week, and I think it was the first time we've seen him really do it with his arm. I mean, basically nothing on the ground as far as running the football, and he was just able to make play after play throwing it.
I was so impressed. I kept watching that game being like, okay, when's the moment, right? Like, when are we going to see him do something and just go, okay, well, that's going to tank, you know, the Bills in this game?
Or he kind of did have one of those where he did, like, and he lands on his arm and he gets hurt and he flips it out there. And
and he took a bad sack, but overall, man, he made – throws where, I mean, he had a passing grade over 90. First time that we've seen that. He was tremendous. I'm really looking forward to, so when lines are released, right at the moment they're released, they're the most inefficient, right? Because people haven't bet into them and everyone bets on football. So those lines get hammered. You know, by the time you get to game time, there's no value. And the Tennessee Titans are interesting to me because they're 3-0. They haven't covered a spread yet.
Really?
Haven't covered a spread yet. And I'm not sold on them. They've just had this kind of freaky, weird situation. The Bills are rolling. If the Bills are even a short favorite in this game, maybe 2.5, I know it's in Tennessee, and the Bills are rolling. Sean McDermott. So I don't know. I think I'm buying into the Bills. I know you haven't watched them yet, like, in depth, but sounds like you are too, I think.
Well, I did. I watched him a little bit the other day with the way that he was playing, and he just looked so confident throwing the ball. I mean, just standing there in the pocket and delivering strikes down the field. Good receivers on that team. So I don't know. You know, we got to give these guys a chance to grow up, like Terry Bradshaw used to tell me. Would you take it easy on these guys? They're just youngins. Give them a chance to grow up a little bit. So he's a youngin who's growing up.
Have you ever seen, like, can you remember a quarterback, like, say he continues this play, you know, so he went from one of the least accurate quarterbacks in the league to guy's a machine. Have you ever seen a guy make a jump like that?
Yeah, I mean, sure, there have been guys that have – I mean, remember, John Elway wasn't much his rookie season, you know? So Troy Aikman won one game his rookie season. And then, you know, they go on to be .500 the next year. And so, yeah, you do see it sometime. Indy at Cleveland. Indy's defense is legit, right? I mean, so we got Cleveland coming off of this game. They're scoring a billion points against the Cowboys. Now they're going to go, it might be like shock factor for them coming back in and playing this good Indy defense.
Okay. So this is all I've heard all week. Indy's defense is first in the league. I mean, who saw this coming? Yada, yada, yada.
You're not buying it.
I'm not buying it. You watch these games. Every week, you start preparing for these games. Who do you start with? You start with the quarterbacks.
Sure.
Okay? There's a reason. Because the offenses matter. They've played the Jags, who, by the way, they lost to. They've played the Vikings, who have struggled kind of mightily. They've played the Jets. I don't need to even tell you about the Jets. They're a disaster on offense. And then they played Nick Foles, who, in his relief duty of Trubisky, 40% of his throws were uncatchable. So I'm not buying into that just yet, but I don't know if I trust – what do I trust more? Do I trust the defense of Indy or Stefanski with the Cleveland Browns? And honestly, I think it's Stefanski because Baker Mayfield, his grade's the same, but the results are better. Like, remember when we did those Minnesota games last year and it was like Kirk Cousins on the rollout? Baker Mayfield had 12 completions all of last year on play-action rollouts, all last year with Freddie Kitchens. He's got 12 already.
That's his game anyway. Yeah. I didn't think he ever looked comfortable last year standing in the pocket with good reason. I mean, their offensive line was a disaster, right? I mean, now they've upgraded.
They're much better.
They're much better in there. But I think it probably is going to take him a little bit of time. But the whole Gary Kubiak passing game, bootleg, run outside zone, inside zone, bootleg off of it. It's a great system.
And I'll say this. So the spread, it's two. They're 2.5-point dogs at home. Okay, so there's a little bit of, we're at home, we should be favored, we're 3-1, chip on the shoulder. And I'm also not that impressed with the Indy offense. It's just, you know, they're not exactly a juggernaut there. I think Phillip Rivers showing a little bit of age. So I think I would lean on the Cleveland money line side of things. And I also think sneaky chance for points in this game. Total at 47 points. We're rooting for points. The overs are clearing left and right, man.
This has been the year of scoring points, like, massively. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I don't know if it's the lack of crowd, it's the hard counts.
What do you think is the biggest contributing factor? Like, if you had to put them in order.
I just think the ease of communication for the quarterback position. I mean, those guys, they're so good. You know, they always talk about offensive coordinators and what that means, you know. Mm. But you call a play as an offensive coordinator, what do you have, 20% chance of it being the right match with whatever they're going to play on defense? And then those guys get out there and go, how not? You know, and they do one of those things. And then you see the safety coming down or the linebacker dropping out, and they go, I know where you are now. Hey, George, go run a slant. You know, and the communication just becomes so easy. It's like in practice, and it's never like that. So, you know, you always get September. Anybody can throw the ball in September, right? Mm-hmm. The weather's perfect. You got it going on. October to some extent. That's the reason championships are won later on. And I think defenses now get more sophisticated because they'll have more time on task, you know, as we go along.
It's funny. Communication's getting better for the guys on the field. You and Al, the communication's getting harder.
Well, you got to put a mask on. So, yeah, it's a little harder. How about the Bengals taking on the Ravens? So, of course, I'm sure the spread's a bazillion.
13,
But Joe Burrow and Joe Mixon, Joe and Joe, here we go. They looking pretty good right now.
Okay, so riddle me this. The Ravens, they're in Baltimore, which I don't know if people are bad at geography, but that's very close to Landover, Maryland, where they played the football team. They were 13.5-point favorites against the Washington football team, who, not very good. Dwayne Haskins, lowest graded quarterback. Joe Burrow, not the lowest graded quarterback. This guy's legit, top five graded quarterback this past week. I can't square how this game has basically the same line as the game against the football team. I'm all in on the Joes. Does that make any sense to you? Like, what would the reasoning be there?
You know, I think the Joes have got something going on right now. I really do. And it's so nice to have that kind of a running game now to take some pressure off of Joe Burrow. I mean, you just turn around and Mixon's a player. I mean, he's
really
a
good
player. I know he had all kinds of controversy coming out and where are you going to draft him and the newspaper stories and justifiably so, you know. But when you just watch him play football, I mean, he can run it, he can catch it, he's a threat. T. Higgins is starting to get some things going on. The problem is, eventually, you have to catch Lamar. I mean, every once in a while, he breaks out on one of those runs, and it just takes your breath away.
I mean, I anticipate him to do that, and for Joe Burrow to take me through the back door. I mean, I have so much faith every time I watch the Bengals this year, because they've covered, they're undefeated. I think they tied in week one against the Jaguars, the Chargers, but they've covered every other week. And the confidence that I have when Joe Burrow's getting his ass kicked to come back through the back door in the fourth quarter.
So the back door would mean that, yeah, the Ravens are going to blow him out. Yep. But then late in the game, Burrow's going to just throw it around and they're not going to really care and they'll score a couple late touchdowns.
Exactly. They're down 17. There's 5 minutes left. Burrow's got one possession left. I know he's scoring a touchdown. I know it.
I love it. The weekly education of me on the gambling front. There you go, George. Thank you very much. And your best bet of the week, the one you like the most.
Man, I mean, you're asking me this a day before Eric and I figure it out on the forecast. But I am going to say that my pick, one that I'll bring to the table, is going to be the Bengals getting 13 in Baltimore.
There you go. My
Joe,
Bengals.
I trust.
Who knew? Thank you, George.